January 2nd edition of Deadbeat Radio. This is the brand new year. This is the brand new show, Daddy. I'm Uncle Bill.
And I'm the creepy Kentuckian. Uncle Bill, do you realize Deadbeat has done Horror Talk Radio through the years 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, and now 2009.
In the year 2009.
That's right.
So guess what, buddy? I'm fucking tired. I'm just tired. I don't feel like doing this fucking shit. So fuck it. I'll tell you right now, I ain't gonna do this anymore. I don't like you. I don't like any of the fans of this shit. Fuck the whole lot of you. No. Huh?
Let me tell you this, Uncle Bill. It's a little surprise, okay? Because I knew you'd say that. We've already replaced you, motherfucker.
What?
We have already replaced you. This is Uncle Bill's last show on deadpit.com. We've replaced him. His replacement will be here next week.
It's fucking Jigger, isn't it?
It is Jigger.
You son of a bitch. How dare you replace me?
He's got more of a personality than you, sir.
I know. Jigger is the man.
Yeah. We haven't done any sort of updates or anything. I've been sicker than fuck for last week. I haven't done a whole lot of stuff online anyway. Uncle Bill's pretty much kept away from the message boards since all that shit happened. So we do need to talk about it before we get into the Petey Awards, which will be up in this next segment here.
Well, first of all, I don't even know what it is. I still to this day don't know what it is that started all this. I don't know what it is that I supposedly said that made people think that I was burnt out. I mean, there are certain things about the show that I don't like doing on a weekly basis because it does get very fucking tedious. But normally, like, I'll like review movies and the call-in portion sometimes and stuff like that. But normally I'll say that on the show and then, like, I'll do something about it if need be, but for some reason somebody took it upon themselves to suggest that I need to take a break from the show.
You need a vacation.
So, the only thing I could think of doing is put up a poll to see how many people thought the same way. I think at last count, I locked the poll out, but at last count, it was like 54 to 4 or something like that. That said, 54 people said I should stay, 4 people. Who, by the way, at least 3 out of 4 of those people were fucking Dr. Blood with various aliases. God damn, buddy, seriously. How old are you that you need to keep doing this? How long have you been on that side under, like, various?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've tried to move on from that, you know, and we haven't really mentioned him much on here. And the thing is, it's sad because you got a grown man, okay, in his late 30s, early 40s, I don't know how old he is. I know he's, you know, he's rather old. Has nothing better to do but go on that message board and try to fuck shit up or do other. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what his deal is. This is a good life, is all I gotta say. Dude, find something better to do with your fucking time.
The weird part about it is in an odd way, this whole thing kind of helped us out some because we got to figure out, like, who the accounts were that he was using to stay on the board and stuff as well. And we deleted a bunch of the accounts that he was actually randomly using throughout this whole thing.
And I'm sure he has more accounts, you know, knowing him. But, you know, the thing is, any of you guys that were sort of, like, on the fence and the whole Dr. Blood thing, look at this shit. It's been 5 months, you know, since that shit happened. And it's like, he's still not over it. Okay, so that, you know, bottom line is, though, with that, getting back to the whole break thing, you know, give me a break, whatever, Neil Carter. The thing with the message board now, and I think it's hurt the show for a little while, the message board in general, us paying such close attention to the message board, because anybody can post anything on there. And really, from this point on, at least for me, I mean, we talked about it. I don't know if you're going to be the same way. I'm not going to be on the board that much at all anymore. I'm probably not going to post a whole lot. You know, probably nothing aside from promoting the show and stuff like that. Because I just don't want to pay attention to people on there that, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. And if it's the majority of the people on the board have an opinion, you know, it might be something to think about. But if a guy, you know, just been listening to the show for 1 or 2 months, doesn't get our sarcasm. And I think that's what happened with the last show. I don't remember exactly what you said. You were saying, you know, I'm sick of doing this shit or something. You know, like you always break out and do your, sarcastic bullshit. But, you know, some of these people don't get that. And I think that's where it all started from. And the people that don't get that, it's, you know, the other board members' job to make sure they do get it. It's not going to be our job anymore.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be on the message board as much either because, for one thing, we've dedicated quite a bit of the MySpace shows over the past couple of months to just dealing with shit that has to do with people posting stuff on the message board. I know a lot of people are getting tired of that, but it just seems like there's always something that comes up, and there's always people that want to complain, and there's always people that want to point fingers, and there's always people that want to bitch and moan about something that has to do with the show. So it's really not worth the time anymore that we invest in even talking about that kind of stuff,
no.
Let alone dealing with it on the message board. So I think it would probably be best for everybody, probably cause the show to move along a lot better and actually have like a lot more content if we just avoided the message board a little bit more. So I'll probably still post on there because there's some things that I do enjoy
well,
posting about, but I guarantee you I won't be on there as much as I have been.
And something that we did do recently is there's a new administrator on the board, goes by the name of Jay Real, and you guys can call him Sheriff Real from now on, because he's going to be the one watching over the board now. We still have our, you know, admin privileges, so if there's anything that we see, happen to see on there, we can take care of it. But Jay has the authority to ban whoever he wants to delete whatever thread he wants to. Anything that is out of line, you know, he sets them straight. So we recently added him on as that. So we now have a total of four people. And I think the other person, we're going to remain nameless who that is. So, but we have people constantly watching, and, you know, if any other assholes want to come on there and start shit, I'm not saying, you know, I don't want to say that, the guy that started the Uncle Bill, you know, needs a break thing is an asshole. I think a few people were saying that. I think he was just a little bit misunderstood. I mean, he didn't understand you were joking, and that was the problem.
Really? You think that? Yeah. I think he's a fucking cocksucker myself.
Now he's going to start crying.
Here's the thing, though. I got a lot of emails about this kind of stuff, like immediately after the situation happened. So let me just put this the best way I can. Nobody's going to cause me to quit doing the show. Now, had it been, like, turned out differently and had, like, 54 people voted yes that I should probably quit the show, I don't know what would happen. But that's not the way it turned out. But nobody, like, no single person is going to cause me to quit doing this. And I probably will never quit doing this, to be honest. I mean, we were talking about this before. Because I just like free DVDs too much. I like free shit in general too much, but I'll probably, just based on that soul factor alone, will probably never quit doing this.
Well,
until I can build the mansion of DVDs that I've always wanted.
In all seriousness, you people gotta realize where we're from. Okay? We're from the middle of nowhere. There's nothing to do around here, okay? So, you know, if this is our only claim to fame ever, we're going to ride this 15 minutes out for the next 15, 20 years, maybe. Because we're not going to quit doing this. I don't care if there's 54 people that tells us to quit. We're not going to quit. We'll just get 54 new fans. Fuck you people that want to quit. That ain't going to happen.
That's right. We're going to cut an old-style wrestling promo on everybody on the board now.
So that's never going to happen. I mean, if we get tired of reviewing movies, we'll probably quit reviewing movies. But we'll still be talking about them because that's just what we do. And before we started recording these shows, we did shows. We talked about horror movies long before deadpit.com was ever registered, you know. So that being said, you know, all the rumors, the gossip and everything out there. It's all bullshit.
It really did, though. Like, it was never my intention to quit doing the show. It kind of took on a life of its own after that whole posting thing. And I don't want to spend too much more time talking about this shit, but needless to say, that was never my intention. I just wanted to see what everybody else thought, and if, like, a large majority of people thought that I should quit, I probably would have at that point in time, but that's not how it turned out.
No, you wouldn't.
You're right. But I would have given it a lot of thought. I may have tried to change some things around.
No, you'd be like, should I go back to buying DVDs?
No.
That's not the only thing. There's actually a lot of perks. There was one very nice perk that happened this past year that we can't really talk about on the show.
Yeah, we could never mention that.
Had I thought about that 3 or 4 years ago, that would be something that would have happened in, like, one of my wet dreams. But that actually happened for real. And that's another reason I'm never going to quit doing this shit. Because you never know, you know, what else could happen down the line.
Seriously, though, like, if you think about all the people we've met that have been really, really good friends and really, really cool people while we were doing this, I mean, it's amazing all the people that we met that we would have never had any idea about before doing this.
Really opened up a whole new door for us.
It did.
So anyway, we've rambled on enough about that. The show tonight is a special, okay? It's probably not going to be a 2.5 hour Dead Pit Spectacular. That's probably coming next week. But this is the second annual Petey Awards. And this was something that last year, it was sort of a half-assed award show because you prepared to give awards away and I didn't. I didn't know what you were doing that. So this year we both.
Really? I don't even remember that.
I remember it. I was like, what the fuck? And then we come up with a Petey Award name during the show like we do everything.
It's going to be a fun show, though, because we've actually got a lot of categories. It's like an award show that we do, but it's not like as boring and shitty as most award shows.
We got some funny fucking awards to give away on this show. So when we come back, we're going to start the award show. But first, we're going to take you back
to the future.
Here on
DeadPit.com.
What's up, Dead Pit listeners? This is Adam Beck, back again for another installment of Back to the Future.
It began at a party. It was only a game.
David, will you return to the living one day?
This week, back in 1987, Kevin S. Tenney's Witchboard was given a limited release playing in 15 theaters. The film grossed a little more than $95,000 that weekend and would go on to make more than $7.3 million after it was given a wide release several months later.
This is going to be fun, Terry.
Who is this?
Back in 1993, 20th Century Fox released Ghost in the Machine in 1,031 theaters. The film starring Karen Allen opened number 10 at the weekend box office, taking in $1.85 million.
Everything around her begins to vanish. Now, she's alone in the darkness.
And finally, last year, Picture House gave the Spanish ghost film The Orphanage a limited release, playing in 19 theaters. The film took in $338,000 and would go on to gross more than $7.1 million in the United States. The Orphanage is a great movie and definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen it. And in other memorable events this week back in 1935, James Whale began shooting one of my favorite Universal monster films, The Bride of Frankenstein. In 1960, Roger Corman finished shooting The Little Shop of Horrors, and the following year began shooting The Pit and the Pendulum. In 1972, Alan Gibson finished shooting the Hammer film, The Satanic Rites of Dracula, starring Christopher Lee. In 1976, Richard Donner finished shooting The Omen, and in 1988, Tony Randall began shooting the Hellraiser sequel, Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. I'm Adam Beck, and this has been Back to the Future for the week of December 29th. Happy New Year's, everybody.
Hey guys, Slipcase here. I'm trying to figure out what was my favorite theatrical horror of 2009, not that there were many of any real value. And even the ones that I did see weren't really horror. I mean, I guess my favorite would be Hellboy 2, but that's not really a horror movie. But certainly the most creative film I saw all year. You know, I'm just going to have to go with Hellboy 2. I can't pick Diary of the Dead because I'm too close to it. And then, you know, I pretty much avoided a lot of the other ones, and, you know, you don't hear me talking about Prom Night. Yeah, I'm going with Hellboy 2, for what it's worth. Even though, like I said, I don't know if that really qualifies. Yeah, Happy New Year.
Diary of the Dead, at least Romero's still trying. Thanks.
Well, welcome back here. Wasn't that a lovely Back to the Future segment? I'm actually starting to kind of like those now.
Them too. They got great music in them.
Yeah.
Adam, back the production quality on those is getting a little better too.
So here's the deal. We came up with an award last year called the Petties.
Right.
It's going to be like our version of like every end of the year award ceremony bullshit that you've ever heard of, except we come up with some of our own special categories.
That's right. You got some of the traditional awards, which we're going to be talking about here in a second, and then some of the more non-traditional. That makes it all more fun.
So I guess we should start off, we won't do like most award shows do, where they bury the lead and start off with like the most shitty
best
first.
Set design.
Yeah. We'll just get right into it. We're going to talk about the best actor or actors in a horror film.
In a horror feature. And the odd thing about this is a lot of this stuff, like, this is why it's not a real award show. Because there's multiple awards for each category because most of our picks are different. So.
And plus, there's usually like a yin and the yang to everything anyway. So with this, normally if we have a best award, we'll have a worst award that follows after that too.
Right.
So it's not just a bunch of ass-kissing bullshit.
That's true.
So the best actor, though, for me, I picked Brady Corbett and Michael Pitt, who were, of course, the two leads in the Funny Games remake, the 2008 version of Funny Games. Came out on DVD in 2008. I guess it came out in theaters in 2007, although we never saw it anywhere around.
I didn't see it.
So, to me, I never saw the original version of Funny Games, but those guys were so fucking obnoxious. Like, really, really yuppie type. Kind of, yeah, just like the character in American Psycho to the 10th degree, added with like even more obnoxious little teen shit that they do to those people, the family in the film. And I thought it was well deserving of the best actor.
My pick for best actor, and a lot of people probably have no clue about this, they've not seen the movie because it isn't out yet, but it would go to Trent Haga for Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula. And this is definitely one of the better independent films we've seen this year. When a lot of the time when people think independent film, they think low budget, you know, camcorder style movie. You know, it doesn't have any good acting in it, you know, horrible makeup effects, stuff like that. Not the case with Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula. This movie looked like a mainstream film you would see in the theaters. And Trent Haga did a great, I mean, I think this was the best role he ever played in a movie. I mean, he was perfect as Clyde in the role, and it was really a good mainstream-style performance from him.
I agree. We'll probably be hearing more about that a little bit later on, but
yep.
As far as worst actor goes, by far, far and away, the worst actor for me was old Marky Mark himself in The Happening. I can't even think of anybody who, like, immediately when I saw him, and he had a role as, like, a biology teacher in that film, the first thing I thought of was, first of all, this is horribly miscast, because nobody's going to believe Marky Mark teaches anything, except maybe hip-hop jazzercise.
Thugonomics.
Yeah, or thugonomics. But the other part was when he actually was trying to emote and have, like, a relationship with I forget the woman's name. Wasn't it Zooey Deschanel or something?
Zooey
It was just the most horrible acting I think I've ever seen in a feature film, that especially one that had that much money behind it.
Well, you can't blame him that much because M. Night Shyamalan was directing him, and it was a script written by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was the script as much as it was just his presence on the screen that really got that.
Something else, though, another performance that was sort of reminded me a lot of Michael Madsen's acting. And it's Malcolm McDowell in Doomsday. It was like one of those roles where...
That's a paycheck role, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can tell he just fucking showed up. He was there, he's like, what the bloody hell is that ugly-ass robe? You're not putting that on me. And, you know, he wears this fucking... I don't know what the hell Neil Marshall was thinking with Doomsday. I mean, that was just... I can't even explain it. But, like, the whole scene with him is during the Castle Camelot scenes, he's like this king in it. And you can tell, like, it looks like he just woke up or something. And he just walked out of his trailer and he's like, just walking around.
Yeah. I know what Neil Marshall was thinking. He was thinking, I mean, come on!
Bloody hell! Yeah. Whoa! Anyway, since we did have Best Actor, we don't have Best Actress, do we? What do you have down for that?
I've got, this is my own award, Best Whore. Only when I say it just sounds like I'm saying horror twice. But it's supposed to be horror, whore.
My power cold.
So, I guess, let you do this one first.
Yeah, I want to have to go with Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula again. Tiffany Shepis, who played Bonnie in the movie. You know, there's not a whole lot of roles for Tiffany Shepis, to be honest with you. And it's hard to really review anything with her in it because, like, we're both really good friends with her, for one thing. But she needs more roles like this for her career. Because the majority of the movies you see her in, Tiffany Shepis is pretty much playing Tiffany Shepis.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, nobody's asking her to perform, really, or try to actually act. And they did that in Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula. It's, in my opinion, the best role she ever played as a character. So,
here's the bottom line, though. With Tiffany Shepis, when she's not busy marrying Corey Haim or drinking vodka and orange juice, she's actually like a really good actress. A lot of people don't ever get to see that because they just assume that she's a dumbass, I think. I don't know what it is, but, or why it is that she gets typecast, but she can actually really act.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't believe that. Well, if you need evidence, whenever Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula comes out, get it. Pick it up, rent it, you know, I'm sure. If I was a betting man, I would say more of a major studio would pick this up whenever it's released. Unless, you know, they want too much money, which has happened before. But Tiffany Shepis, this is definitely one of her best roles ever.
So my pick, though, for the best horror would be, and this was a tough one. I had it narrowed down between two people that I really thought were exceptional. But I'm going to pick old Jess Wexler, who was the lead female in Teeth. I don't know if a lot of people actually got to see Teeth, but she... That movie lived or died on her performance alone. She was the center of that movie. She was on screen, I'd say, 90% of the time. I mean, and it worked as well as it did because she gave like a really offbeat comedic performance as a woman who has teeth in her vagina. I don't know. You know, that's a very subtle role to play, I think.
Yeah. And you also had another person down there that you should definitely...
Yeah, I should mention this, because like I said, I was struggling between the two of these, but old, I don't know if you pronounce her last name Dolly or Doll, but Beatrice Doll from Inside, who was, of course, the killer in Inside. That's, for one thing, that's a creepy-looking woman right there.
Yeah, no doubt.
I can't even describe how off she looks, but...
It's one of those women, too, that you just see her and you hate her. Like, you just... It's so hard to explain.
Like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. A little bit like that. A little bit like...
God, I hate you.
Yeah. A little bit like Sean Hannity, too. You know?
Yeah.
You just see people and you're like, God, I hate... God damn, I hate that motherfucker. And she was like one of them. I was like, oh, God. I mean, I just... You just instantly hated her for some reason. I don't know if that's how she normally looks or what, but yeah, I mean, that was a great role in that movie for sure. One other one, and then we'll take another break, because what we're going to do towards the end of the show, we've had a bunch of people call in, and for our best theatrical horror film of 2008, we've tallied up all the votes. We're going to announce a winner at the end of the show.
Yay!
But next award, talk about best indie film. Let's just go to that one. And this one, you know, a lot of people out there probably aren't big into the indie scene, but I think that this was a great year for indie films. There were a lot of really good ones that came out.
Like the indie film that I picked, there's a difference between independent films. I mean, there's films like Inside, which is, I guess you could call that independent, but it had I'd say it had a good couple $100,000 budget. And then there's stuff like the one that I picked that I'd say if it had like a $30,000 to $50,000 budget, that'd be pushing it.
Right.
So, I mean, there's different levels here.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about true independent film.
Yeah.
You found some investors backing you up. You didn't have a major studio backing you. One I want to pick is Scott Phillips' movie that I think it is out now. And it's actually another one that Trent Haga is in. He's not in that much. Also has appearances by Gunnar Hansen and our good buddy Elska McCain's in it. Gimme Skelter is what I pick for best indie film. And, you know, I know the one that you have down there is definitely close between these. But this one, I just love the atmosphere of this one. And you had a lot of really good-looking women in this movie, too, which is always a plus. And the cool thing, though, about Scott Phillips' movies, the ones that I've seen so far, is a lot of them are shot out in the desert, like New Mexico or Arizona or wherever he's from. I just love the look of those movies. Just the way they look. You know, a lot of independent films look really generic and cheap and looks like they made them in like a day or something, you know. But this movie, I mean, it actually, I think that the locations and stuff actually gave this movie a lot more life than it would have had they shot it in the city somewhere, you know.
So the one that I picked, though, has already been mentioned on here a couple of times now, but I just cannot believe how good this movie was to be as, first of all, to have the name that it has and to be as cheap as it was to make, which was Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula. And when you hear that title, you don't automatically think this is going to be a movie that has some great acting performances in it and it's going to look like $1 million, despite the fact that it doesn't have that big of a budget. But you put Tiffany Shepis together with Trent Haga and you let them both act. You let them both really show what they can do. And a guy that's really competent in the way that he directs the film, it's a great movie. It's a great movie no matter what the budget of it is. It works on a lot of different levels. I actually thought that the costume design and the way that it was filmed was actually pretty authentic for the time period as well, which is amazing for a film, you know, that's got the kind of money that film had.
Plus, we've got to say, Tiffany Shepis does have a full frontal nude scene in this movie.
Yeah, and I won't deny the fact that Tiffany Shepis looks hotter than hell anyway, but she looks really hot as a blonde. I couldn't really get over that.
Yeah. She looks hot. She looks hot with any hair on her head.
That's true.
She probably, that's true. She'd look hot if she grew a beard. But anyway, we want to take a break. We've got a bunch more awards and stuff to talk about. And we're going to hear some of y'all's picks. We'll be back shortly here on the Original Horror Talk Radio Show. We ain't going anywhere, baby. Over here at deadpit.com,
Betty.
Every year, the finalists for the Miss Cheerleader USA contest travel to this secluded camp.
Hey, there is no going back. For some, it will be the crowning achievement of their lives.
I'm gonna win that queen contest.
Nerves are on edge.
There's something eating at everybody, right?
Ever since we've been here, it's never a good night.
Jealousies are exposed, and hatreds explode. This year, something evil has come over the contestants.
She shows I'm gonna kill her.
The instructors.
You're a mascot, not a human.
The judges. And the hired help.
I hope you die.
Something is about to make them all victims of Bloody Pom-Poms. Betsy Russell, Leif Garrett, Lucinda Dickey, Laurie Griffin.
We gotta walk out of here.
It's at least 40 miles.
Finally, something to die for.
Hey guys, happy new year and all that shit. It's JJ1138 from the board, calling for the Pity Awards. Going for best theatrical release of the year, or best limited theatrical release of the year, I'm going to say was Let the Right One In. Best wide release, I think was Cloverfield. And best direct-to-video would definitely be Inside. Alright, can't wait for more shows. Take it easy, guys.
Hey guys, it's Michael. Best theatrical horror release. I didn't see anything worth the fuck. The theaters. This year. Only thing that entertained me in the theater is probably The Dark Knight. Horror-wise, nothing really. DVD-wise, I guess I'll go with Inside. Tension was pretty cool. But, last week's show, man, horrible. I mean, not it wasn't your guys' fault, but I mean, I had to listen to that show in third. It was just sickening to hear the review of 2008, how shitty it was. But anyway, that's my vote.
Howdy, folks, and welcome back to the Petey Awards.
Howdy.
We have a bunch more funny ass fucking awards to talk about, so let's go ahead and get into it. Uncle Bill.
Well, this one you can pretty much expect in any awards ceremony that has to do with movies. This is Best Director, and I have no fucking qualms whatsoever with picking Dario Argento as the best director for me personally of 2008, because I don't know why this is, but other websites that will go unnamed.
Shocking to you, do, piece of shit. Shocking to you, do, falls off. Fuck you. Oh, fuck you, Rod Rotten.
They picked his newest film, Mother of Tears, as the worst, one of the worst films of 2008. Now, to me, that's like a fucking abomination, because his film was one of the best to me, and I like a complete return to form, back to the stuff that people wanted to see Argento do, which was the old school stalk and slash type of, you know, supernatural films like that.
Yeah.
That's the way it worked. He brought back the craziness, the lack of plot, and everybody shit on it. So I don't really know what people want anymore.
Well, you know, Ryan Rotten out there, shock till you drop, whatever. We're all entitled to our own opinion, but your opinion fucking sucks. Okay? Motherfucker, you want to talk about this? And I've got Dario Argento as the best director this year as well. Because nobody else that I know of can come back after 25, 30 years and make almost exactly the same style film he made, you know, back in the 70s, you know, Suspiria or Deep Red, the same style. I mean, you're not going to make it look exactly the same, but it's the same style. And I don't know if you're a fan, you're just not a fan of Giallo movies or Argento films or what, but you're going to put this as one of your worst movies of the year, while at the same time you put The Strangers as one of the best movies of the year, and you call yourself a horror journalist. Look, I want to call the California Board of Horror and have them revoke your fucking certificate of horology. Your horologist certificate, son of a bitch. Because that shit just, seeing shit like that just makes me mad. You know, it's just like elitist bullshit. It's mainstream, so we've got to put it on there.
Willing to bet he doesn't even have a BA in whore.
Probably not.
Here we are, certified whorologist. I don't understand how the credentialing system has gone down so far and whore journalism.
That's the thing with us. We see something that's just blatantly stupid, like you putting that shit on your list, we're going to call you out for it. We didn't have a problem with your site before, but when you put something on there that's stupid, it's flat out dumb. Okay? There's no other way to say it. Your opinion sucks.
Yeah, when I actually think about how many films that I had to wade through, because there will be a worst film segment coming up, to wade through to get to the worst film of my pick for the worst film. And Mother of Tears wouldn't even come in the top 20. Like, that wouldn't even be a thought in my head. There's so much shit that came out in 2008. Here you are. Oh, look at here.
And you're going to fucking put that boring ass piece of shit, The Strangers, up as one of your favorites. Something's wrong, okay? I don't think Uncle Bill needs to quit. I think Ryan Rotten needs to quit.
Needs to quit sucking.
But yeah, I had Dario Argento as well. But the next award is a big one. Oh yes, it's a real big one. Best titties.
Yay!
You know we'd have this on here, folks. You know. Best titty awards. Best titty pity awards. Look, there might be a chance she'll listen to this. I don't know. But Elsa McCain's got the nicest titties I've probably ever seen. As far as just, for one thing, they're natural. Like, to me, they look like natural size. And it's like, that's just, if you see them, they're like, oh my God. Those damn things. Like, they're real. You know? So, Elsa McCain gets my vote and Gimme Skelter for the best titties of 2008.
She's got some luscious breasticles, Dad.
Yeah, amazing, baby. And they got those big ass nipple on them,
too. Oh, look like $5 pancake you can sop up with a biscuit, baby.
That's right. I sop them up with my moist tongue, baby.
Oh, Lord. So, mine is kind of like an extension of that as well. It's just the whole movie, Poltergeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, because one thing that Troma does, and I'll give them credit for doing this all the time, they just include the most random ass shots of women's tits and all throughout their films for no particular reason and ever explain why this is. It's just, I think Kaufman knows that people want to see nudity in films, and they don't really, he doesn't want to work it into a storyline anywhere, so he just has people randomly flash the camera, and I think Elska was one of those people in that movie too, so I give it up
boing, boing, boing.
For everybody in that fucking movie that did that. So there you go. Up next, though, and this is a big one for the whorehounds out here, the best gore/death sequence in a film.
It's gory. It's brutal. It's evil.
There was quite a few this year, actually, because there was quite a few movies that would be considered, like, brutal.
Dude.
Fucking torturous. But I think for just the sheer brutality of it, I'm going to have to go with Corlina Cataldi Tassani in her intestinal strangulation sequence.
That was brutal, dude.
In Mother of Tears. Plus, what the fuck is that dude sticks in her mouth, like breaks all of her teeth out of her head with? It looks like one of those things you use to lather up.
Concrete dong.
Looks like something you use to lather up shaving cream with or something.
One that I'm going to pick, and it's really, I mean, unless you put it on, slow-mo, you're not going to see a whole lot, although there is a lot of gore in this movie. But the one death scene in Inside that had me going back and putting it on slow-mo, and I was wondering how the hell did they do this, is the cop's head exploding scene where, he's shot with a gun and stuff. And that's just so well done that, I'm surprised they don't do that stuff in mainstream movies here. And it was one of the only big jump scenes that actually worked for me in 2008.
So
what do we have next? Let's look here. Let's see. Let's pick out a good one here. You've actually got a pretty good topic we can talk about on here. Best mandatory inclusion of a minority.
Here's how this works, for people that don't know. Horror films are not very accommodating to minorities. But when they do, they often do it at the expense of any kind of logic in the script or anything. They just put, like, random fucking people in movies just because they're minorities. I don't know why this is. It just seems to happen a lot. I don't understand it. But it's like the old strategy of having, like, a black guy in a slasher film just so he can, like, show up and be, like, the joking character or the guy that gets killed, like, right off the bat.
Yeah, and be, like, sort of like Hatchet where the joke's already about 8 years old.
Yeah.
And there's still a black guy in there. Oh, man, people like me don't survive a movie like this. Oh, man, doo-doo-doo.
Or you can look at any scary movie, any of the scary movies, yeah. And there's always, like, a bunch of dumbasses riffing on that fact that, you know, black people don't make it through horror films. So, anyway, my best mandatory inclusion of a minority would definitely be Exhibit, the son of a bitch from MTV that builds cars and shit, who's in
the X-Files. You just been pimped, motherfucker.
Pimp is Rod.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a choice for this because I think this is just a custom award just for Exhibit. Although there is another one that was sort of funny in Poltergeist, if you remember the Arabian woman that is...
oh, God.
In the...
I've forgotten about that, yeah.
So that is a good
one. Who's just kind of in like a burqa for the whole time for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
And of course, I would give this guy an award for just being the worst ethnic actor of all time anyway. But he showed up in The Happening as well. The worst mandatory inclusion of an ethnic group or minority would have to be John Leguizamo in The Happening. And he was also equally as fucking shitty in Land of the Dead as well. That guy, just stay the hell away from those movies. Matter of fact, just stay the hell away from movies in general. That'd be nice.
So we have, it looks like a couple more awards related to theatrical horror films, I think. Then we got some DVD awards, which we'll be going to, just other random shit. So, Best Killer of 2008. And this is an interesting one because there wasn't a whole lot of, like, slasher films to come out this year at all. It wasn't at all like, you know, 2007 where there was tons and tons of stuff. I mean, there were, you know, remakes, Prom Night and shit like that, but the topic
nobody,
is Good Killer.
Nobody ever really tried to come up with anything original this year. It didn't seem to me like, I mean, if you look at the killer in Prom Night, it's basically just a guy.
With a cap on.
With a cap. not a lot of creativity going into this.
But my pick, and when I think of killer, I think of who has killed the most. And I think that, you know, this dude has killed more than anybody in one single movie with Rambo, Sylvester Stallone. It's not really, I mean, a lot of people would debate on whether or not it's a real horror film or not, but, I mean, it had a lot of gore in it, so
I would be willing to guarantee you that film had more death in it than any horror film we saw.
Yeah, and it's probably one of the better experiences I had in theaters this year, actually. I mean, we're not going to be talking about this movie a whole lot, simply because it's not really a horror movie, but when you talk about Best Killer, Rambo was right up there.
And, of course, I'm going to have to pick the standard, because I enjoyed this movie so much, which is old Beatrice Dahl again, for her role in Inside. I just think that when I was going through my head about all the memorable sequences, her stalking, especially of the police officers in Inside, was fucking horrifying. And the fact that she looks the way she does, and I've heard like that there's a lot of rumors that she's really kind of eccentric to work with, to say the least, and nutty. Would be another word that I've heard people use to describe working with her on the sets of films. She's kind of like, she's kind of like off to her own little world through all these things. Just kind of gives credence to some of the characters that she plays as well. So
credence,
yeah, credence is another good one too.
Yeah, that wasn't in 2008 though.
So the next one though, I'm not exactly sure what the hell I was trying how to put this. But I guess this would just be best overall design, or best
costume.
Best costume or something, yeah. But my best is going to Cloverfield, because regardless of what you actually think the monster looks like or how it looks, here's the fact. everybody wanted to see that damn thing. The people that made that movie were fucking geniuses in the way that they covered it up and had the, you know, the action revolve around it up until the very end, because there was a huge buzz about what that monster looked like up until the point the movie came out.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the cool thing about Cloverfield, that it sort of accomplished. I mean, something that happened with the Blair Witch Project is just one of those things that happened. It was a product of its time. It's one of those deals where they had a lot of people convinced it was a real movie. Okay, so you're never going to be able to do that again with the internet. The internet has evolved a lot since then. But what they did do is they made the monster something big to see. People didn't know what it looked like. They wanted to see, you know, they kept it really well hidden until the theatrical release. So that was a really cool thing. Now, a movie that we haven't reviewed yet, but we'll say that we'll probably review it next week. Just go ahead and say that. But I have seen the look of the leading lady in the movie, okay? And it's one of the more original designs for a killer in that I've seen in a long time, and that is Elska McCain in Jessica Rabbit. And in this movie, she looks all, you know, sort of like she has rabies or something. I guess that's the big thing. And she has teeth filed down and just really looks not at all like her in this movie. So I'll have to pick that one.
Yeah, she does look like a weird kind of cross between somebody that would be in the Crazies. Like, she has got the contacts in that are the white contacts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's got the filed down mouth look like one of the fucking bat things in The Descent. It's a nice mixture of things. But the worst, I had to pick for the worst overall costume design or whatever, just the dude with the fucking underwear on his head from The Strangers. That's the laziest shit I've ever seen. Somebody got together. I believe Kenneth J. Hall was the guy. I know he was responsible for the mask in the film.
Yeah, but I don't think that counts as a mask.
No.
Somebody's dirty underwear. I don't think he designed that.
Even if you were trying to go for realism, like you were saying that guy just broke into people's houses and took whatever he, you know, was there as like a disguise, nobody in their right mind is just going to put somebody's underwear on their fucking head and walk around.
One that I've got to put in there, though, as I was watching this movie recently, again, on Blu-ray, doing a review for it, was Diary of the Dead. And there's a few characters in this movie that don't fit, okay? And there's one particular zombie in the movie that's just stupid. And that was the zombie clown in Diary of the Dead. Just the way it looked, I think his nose broke off in it or something. I was like, you know, it's not the 80s anymore. You could pull that shit off in the 80s and it would come across, yeah, it's cheesy and hokey and stuff. It just didn't fit in with this movie at all. It was, they didn't need that, and it looked stupid.
You didn't like the zombie bozo in
it? I didn't like it. But when we get back, though, we're going to be talking about DVDs.
All right, Daddy.
DVD companies, you know, whatever else. So the conclusion, I suppose, we have a few more awards to talk about, who knows. We will be back with the conclusion of the Pity Awards here. On Dead
Beer.com.
When cruelty knows no bounds, when evil knows no limits, revenge strikes with its most frightening power. They called her One Eye, then ran for their lives. Your most fearful nightmares, the most cruel sight you have ever seen, cannot match the shock of this motion picture experience. They called her One Eye, rated R.
I'm heading for some place that ain't in a dream. I'm heading where no mortal man's ever been. And you may never see my face again. The eyes of a fool and the heart full of fire. I'm climbing a mountain that keeps getting higher. I'm playing a game where no one's supposed to win. On my way, where I want to be, got to stay. Oh yeah.
Hey, boys, it's Indy Phantom calling from Canada. My pick for best of the year would be Red, which was actually a Lucky McKee film. Or I don't know the whole story there, but he's one of the two directors credited. And there was a special feature on the DVD that's led me to believe that he was replaced or something like that. But anyway, that's if you like the Jack Ketchum films like Girl Next Door, The Lost, I wouldn't say it's quite up to that level, but I really enjoyed it, and I just watched it actually a couple of weeks ago. That's got to be my pick, because anything else I'd pick from 2008 would be either bullshit or a guilty pleasure. So anyway, a little runner-up would be the television series True Blood, which is Alan Ball's show on HBO. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's pretty cool. It's got Anna Paquin, lots of nudity, lots of vampires. Good show. Anyway, I better keep this short, so take care and Happy New Year.
Greetings, this is Victor the Undertaker from HauntedHotSauce.com. I would like to nominate Cloverfield as my pick for the best theatrical horror movie of 2008. 2008 wasn't really a great year for horror movies, but Cloverfield is still pretty strong. So that's my pick. Love the show. Thanks. Stay rotten.
Howdy-o, folks, and welcome back to the Pity Awards. Now we're getting into the DVD and miscellaneous portion of the award show. I know everybody out there that's had something out. You know, I'm sure that even Neil Marshall's listening in, hoping he'll win an award.
Good!
You know, I'm sure we have Tiffany Shepis, Elska, they're all listening in. They want to know what awards they've won and stuff. And these are real awards, folks. We're going to send out golden flashlights to every winner. So you can all see if the women can finger fuck them and the guys, you know what you can do with them.
Well, I mean, it is a big giant flashlight, like flashlight thing. You can do, women do all kinds of shit with that.
That's true.
So, I guess we need to talk about the best overall DVD. Came out in 2008. And It should come as no surprise to people that listen to this show and hear the call-in portion and enjoy all the stuff that makes Dead Pit what it is today, that one of the DVDs that I picked, and rightfully so, I'm not showing any favoritism, was a Michael Felcher joint as far as the extras go.
Was it?
It was.
That means he'll be a two-time Pity Award winner.
Well, the guy, you just can't go wrong with some of his stuff. I mean, he produces good quality special features and commentaries for DVDs. But, of course, one of mine had to be Savage Streets. I mean, I had never seen this film before. Here's my only qualm, though. I've had this qualm since the movie came out.
We want to have a qualm with you, Mike.
We do. There was no mention in the special features, to my knowledge, or anything talked about the soundtrack of the film, which I believe, now that I've listened to it for about fucking 6 months in a row now, it's probably one of the best soundtracks to any movie ever made. Just as a standalone soundtrack, it's great.
It's awesome.
It is. It's just beyond awesome. So, though, as far as the actual film and the packaging, the whole packaging, the whole look of the product goes, that DVD was second to none, really.
Yeah, I got another Slipcase title on here that he did some work on that I thought had some great extras on it, and it was just great seeing the movie again. And a lot of people really don't want to see the movie because it does have some real, animal deaths and stuff in it. This is the original Faces of Death from the late 1970s. I think it's 1978. And Gorgon Video recently came out with the DVD and Blu-ray version of it, and with the help of Red Shirt Pictures and Michael Slipcase Felcher, they released a kick-ass DVD. But these Slipcase titles are tied with one title we both agree on.
Right.
And this is a movie that had been released on DVD before, but never given the treatment it deserved on DVD. And it's the perfect film for me. It's the perfect type of movie, perfect movie that I enjoy watching, that style, And that would be Juan Pacer Simón's Pieces, which was released by Grindhouse Releasing.
Yeah, I think to fully appreciate how awesome this DVD is, though, you have to consider if you've ever had a copy of the other versions of the DVD, which I have, like the ones that were on the Brentwood, and there was another one that Diamond Releasing came out with. Mm. If you've ever seen those and how shitty they looked, you would be amazed at how well the film was, you know, restored, remastered for the Grindhouse Releasing version. Plus, they've got an in-depth. And when I say in-depth, I mean, they don't just talk about the film Pieces itself on the special features with the actors. They talk about their whole fucking careers. Like, what was the guy's name?
Paul Smith.
Yeah. Like, they talked to him for, I guarantee, an hour on that special features.
And, you know, I know that a lot of these companies don't have the space to put all that stuff on, but that's what made this DVD different is, like, they made it two discs so they could put everything on it, you know, that they had. So, this is excellent, though. If you're a fan of slasher films, over-the-top gore films, stuff from the 80s, Pieces is, like, one of the highest recommendations I could give you. Because it's, like, the perfect style movie like that. Like, if you like something like fucking Blood Diner or something, you'd love Pieces.
I agree. It's kind of along the same vein. I don't think it really even means to be as comedic as Blood Diner did, but it turns out that way. So,
yeah, and since we did have DVD of the year, we got to have DVD Studio of the Year. And we had a little bit of an argument about this earlier, so this is probably going to be pretty fun. I have a tie for Best DVD Company. Now, it shouldn't be a tie because one of the companies are now officially out of business, and that's BCI Eclipse. I really thought that they came into their own this year and really started releasing a lot of horror titles that people wanted to finally come out. And whether they like it or not, Final Exam was one that people really were wanting to come out. And they released a lot of the Code Red stuff. I don't know what's up with that now, if Code Red is looking for a new distributor now or what. And they did Savage Streets. And they did, you know, a bunch of those awesome exploitation double features and stuff like that.
Needless to say, though, if you want to pick up a copy of Final Exam, you better do that quickly before it goes out of print again.
Yeah. And Savage Streets.
Yeah. Well, anything. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, BCI was one of the companies, too, that also released Blu-rays. They were one of the smaller studios to release Blu-rays. So it's a shame that they're gone now. Because we sort of were, like, you know, curious as to why none of their emails worked after this had been 2 or 3 months ago, you know, because we send these reviews in to these people and none of their emails worked. Like, I tried all of the emails that I had for people at BCI. They all were bounced back, so we thought that was pretty suspicious. But we didn't know until recently that they're gone.
Well, I guess mine, and this is going to be odd for people because this is not like the kind of company that releases a lot of nostalgic stuff that I would normally like. Like in the past, I would have picked stuff like Blue Underground or Anchor Bay or just companies like, but let's be honest, companies like that don't even really release stuff that much anymore, let alone release.
It's all been released.
Quality titles. Yeah. So the one that I picked is the one I would never think I'd be saying this, but it's true. They had the most titles that to me represented the stuff that I like and had the best range in terms of film would be Dimension Extreme. And I'll tell you why. First of all, they released Inside, which I think was an amazing film, and we'll get into that more a little bit later. They also released Diary of the Dead, which, like that movie or hate it, I didn't like it that much. I mean, that was a big deal for Romero fans at the time that it was released. They released Mother of Tears, which is another big time film, you know, from Argento.
Triloquist.
They released that, yeah. They released Teeth, which was another film that I think was pretty underrated and one that I really enjoyed. Now, in between that, they also did release some shit like Triloquist, and I think Steel Trap was another one that was like a Saw kind of ripoff. But
Teen Game of Death.
Yeah.
Hell Ride. I mean, the thing with Dimension Extreme is the majority of the stuff they released, in my opinion, wasn't worth watching. They did have some great titles that probably had they not been around, would not have come out. You know, I'm sure stuff like Inside maybe would have come out and stuff like that. But, you know, Diary of the Dead, who knew what would have happened with that? I mean,
I just think that as far as that's a mainstream company. That's a part of Dimension. You know, it's a big company. As far as releasing stuff that you probably wouldn't see other companies like that even think about releasing, that has to be the best overall company.
And the one I want to, and we're having a little bit of argument about this, too, and this is the main, because what is best DVD studio? And when I think of best DVD studio, I mean, it's not necessarily the movies they release, it's just how much detail they go into remastering the movie, how many extras they have on the movie, regardless of what the movie is. And to me, the best company that does that would be Synapse Films. I mean, they've always been the best company to do that. Now, while they haven't released a lot of really good titles this year, although they did release a few that I enjoyed, I think that they just take the time and put, like, the extras that other studios wouldn't put. They remastered the movies that other studios wouldn't remaster. So, I mean, that would be another pick of mine for DVD Studio of the Year.
I'm not going to say that I agree that Synapse is probably up there with one of the top three companies that actually puts special features and how much effort they put into remastering stuff in high def and making sure that it's properly formatted and has good sound and all that stuff. The only thing that to me is that a company of any kind is only as good as the product that they release. So it's kind of like their responsibility to wade through the product and make sure that it's something that's fan-friendly.
Yeah, something like Triloquist.
Yeah, something like Executive Koala.
You look at it anyway, though. I mean, both companies release some bad stuff. Both of them release good stuff. You just got to wade through the good to get to the bad, or wade through the bad to get to the good.
Wade through the good to get to the bad. Yeah, I think we've done enough of that.
So, what else do we have here? We got some just odds and end awards here that are pretty funny. That here's one that's Are They Still in Business Award. And this is the DVD studios that really have been dead throughout all of 2008 and not really released much of anything. And the one I put down here is I'm surprised they're not dead for real because they haven't come out with anything of note this year at all, and that would be Tempe Video, who before I was actually looking forward to getting stuff from Tempe Video, but anymore we just don't get it. I mean, they may have an occasional press release, but you might as well not ask for it because you're not going to get it to review. You know, they just, I guess they don't have the money anymore. You know, there's a couple other studios like that too. Full Moon is another one that, you know, they might as well not exist to me. I mean, we don't get any of their stuff to review, so.
That's interesting. Like, all the shit we don't get to review, those companies don't exist.
Well, how are you going to watch it? You can't buy it in stores.
You know? Yeah, Full Moon's one of those companies. We got, like, a couple of their releases, and my God, like, it was truly fucking horrible. I think Killer Bong or was, like, one of them we got, and then there was another Petrified. Just really bad shit. But to me, the one company that I think was the worst and just for the sheer fact that they used to be so great and now you won't even know they exist except for the fact that every 6 months they have one genre release that people really care about is Anchor Bay.
Yeah, I think when Anchor Bay sold the, when they changed ownership to IDT initially and then changed it, It even hurt them even more when they changed it to Stars. They're sort of non-existent, really. I mean, every once in a while they re-release something they already had out before.
Like, yeah, that's the thing that pisses me off the most, I think, is just anything that sold well for them in the past, that's like their new thing, is to repackage it and sell it as some kind of special ultimate uber fucking edition of something.
I mean, they have a new version of Hellraiser 2 out, which Slipcase does have some new extras on it, but Anchor Bay really needs to get some new titles, you know, either some new, like, how many versions of Halloween can they come out with?
Evil Dead.
You know, you need to pick up some new shit or something. I mean, and even when IDT was in there, they would have their independent films, and that would be something at least. I mean, most of them were horrible, but they would have, that would be something. They don't even do that anymore. So,
yeah, I think Left in Darkness was, yeah, that sealed the fate for the fucking,
yeah, Anchor Bay. I mean, it's sad because that was one of the companies that I, every once in a while when we'd go out of town and look in these used DVD stores, I would buy an Anchor Bay DVD just because it was Anchor Bay. It didn't matter what the movie was. I just always knew that Anchor Bay put out a quality product. They didn't release just anything and everything. Like, usually all their Euro titles were really good, stuff I didn't know about, so, you know.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's so bad because they used to be so great at what they do, and now it's, they're not even in the top 10, probably.
Yeah.
But we got to talk about this because this is kind of like a signature award. I don't think we've ever given this out, but it's definitely one that needs to be discussed. It's the Asshole of the Year Award.
That's right. And we both agreed to one asshole.
When you think assholes, this is the guy that really stood out as doing something that's just so epically fucking dickish that it defies real logic.
Yeah, Asshole of the Year. So, you might not be thinking poor little Shelly from Friday the 13th Part 3 would grow up to be a total asshole dick that he is today. But we can talk about some of the shit that he's done, you know, over the last year. For one thing, he's a fucking lawyer now. He's an entertainment lawyer. Talk about what he did recently at a convention, Uncle Bill.
Well, we have a good friend, and a lot of people know him from the board and stuff. We won't get into names or anything. Doesn't really matter. But we were at the Fright Night Film Fest, and he went up and asked, you know, about an autograph. And basically, Larry Zerner told him it was $20 for either his item or a bought item or anything like that, because he was Larry Zerner, and you were paying for his name. Like, for him to write his name,
that's right,
was $20 regardless.
His signature's worth $20.
And we're talking about, and plus he, I mean, from what I understand, he was pretty much a dick that whole weekend anyway.
Yeah.
But that just kind of sealed the deal right there. That was the icing on the cake, if you will.
Yeah, and there was another occasion, too, where they invited him down for the Scream Fest last year. And like we were saying, he's an entertainment lawyer. But they, you know, the way these conventions work is the promoters of these shows, and I'm talking about Scream Fest, now known as Spooky Empire in Orlando, Florida, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But these promoters pay the celebrities way down there, usually give them a $200 or $300 amount of money to spend for food the weekend. So pays his way everything. And this is Larry Zerner, folks. This guy shouldn't even deserve to get his shit paid for. Okay? Nobody knows who he is. Nobody gives a shit. Okay? You people may be like, no, it's not true. Larry Zerner was sitting with a thumb up his ass the whole weekend at Friday Night Film Fest. Nobody knew who he was. Anyway, back to the Spooky Empire thing. He shows up. I guess when he got back, he looked it up that the Scarefest name wasn't copyrighted. So what the motherfucker does is goes and copyrights the name and sells the copyright to another Screamfest in California. And then they go and sue the Screamfest in Orlando and make them change the name.
Yeah, so basically for being invited to a convention to where you then copyright that convention's name while you're there, in essence, and you know, you figure out that it's not copyrighted, then turn around and suing them for using that name, buddy, you have to win the Asshole of the Year Award. There's nobody has the balls to do something that dickish and get away with it. But Larry Zerner,
very first ever pity asshole of the year. So another one that's sort of fun that we can talk about, though, and this one's more of a positive one, is Best Newcomer of 2008. Now, this could be newcomer in the world of horror, a newcomer in the world of Dead Pit. But my choice is, and we met the little fella down there at Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky, Doodle. Doodle is best newcomer of the year for 2008.
Doodle-a-doo. I can't even argue with that, really. I mean, that, to me...
And the people... Yeah.
To me, that started a whole new portion on this show dedicated to shit that has to do with Doodle. Because that's almost like a character in a movie. It's so great. The whole, you know, the Doodle expression, the fact that the person is named Doodle and the people behind naming him Doodle.
Well, we should explain that for the people that may have missed it.
We were at the Scarefest, which was an amazing show in Lexington, Kentucky this year, and there was a group of people that looked like they come from a hollow around here, in and of the fact that they just were about as redneck as you could possibly get.
They didn't have any teeth.
No teeth. This woman had no teeth in her head, which I think should be a requirement for, like, public, going out in public. It's just you should have to wear teeth. But she didn't have any teeth in, and her and her little misfit children were wandering around aggravating the piss out of all the celebrities to try to get, you know, autographs and this stuff.
Well, yeah, and they weren't spending any money either, I don't think. I mean, it's one of those deals where, and I'm not saying that you have to spend money at shows or anything, but it's borderline you're getting on the nerves of the celebrities if you keep coming back and getting your picture with them over and over again. And this lady, Doodle's grandma, I guess.
I'm guessing, yeah.
Was aggravating the hell out of Kane Hodder, who was right beside of us. So we sort of got like a front row seat to all the Doodle mania that was running wild. And the funniest shit. Yeah, you explained the Doodle thing better than me, though. So go ahead. As far as the funniest shit that happened.
Well, I was just standing there and... This, for one thing, this fucking kid was running around like a crazy ass, and nobody knew his name or anything yet, and this old woman goes, "Hey, Doodle, get over here, it's Kane Hodder!" And then when they must have left or something and came back, when they actually came back, I think it was Doodle, it was one of them kids, was asleep, and when they took the picture, of like Doodle's grandma, and Doodle, like, holding Doodle next to Kane Hodder. He looked like he was sucking on Kane Hodder's tent. Because he was asleep. And he's, like, laying on Kane Hodder. Oh! It was priceless. Like, that. Yeah. You really
had... Like that normally happens at the flea market. Like, yeah. You usually get funny-ass stories like that at the flea market. But... I don't know. That was just gold, man. I hope to God Doodle and family come back next year at Scarefest. Because that was definitely the most memorable story of that show for some reason.
Doodle. Just the name Doodle.
You name a poor kid Doodle.
Fucking killer. Oh, but anyway. My best newcomer goes to another new friend of the show. Just... I'm not even sure why. I think it was because he's just such an awesome co-host and friend of the show. Is Jigger the Pumpkin.
That's right. The funny thing about that is, I'll give the whole backstory behind Jigger.
Yeah, a lot of people might not know about Jigger. I know I was amazed.
And people thought that was sort of like a racist thing that we were saying, you know, because it rhymes with a certain other... word that ends in Igger.
So, Tigger?
Yeah. Jigger, and the whole thing with Jigger is a real guy. There's really a guy named Jigger. That's his real name. Okay? And actually found out about it from where I work at. I see a lot of funny fucking names. Just say that. And Jigger was the first name of a guy. And I saw that and I was like, you got to be kidding me. That's got to be a nickname. But no, that was that guy's real name, Jigger. So that's where the name Jigger came from.
And I, for some reason, I just found it amusing that our mascot could be this fucking light up pumpkin that you could like bite big lumps. We just sit it like in our laps while we're doing this thing.
Because we didn't have a table to sit it on.
We didn't have any. It was great. Anyway. So, I guess we could talk about, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, I guess, but the best rag or the best horror publication to come out.
Fangoria.
It by far has to be Fangoria. Just for shit, you know, that I like Twilight that I want to know about. We've talked about this. I think it was like one of the most mentioned things on a call-in portion one time when we had favorite publications. Well, it has to be Whorehound. Bar none has to be that. Because that is a collector's magazine. And I don't know if anybody's noticed. I know I'm noticing as I'm sitting here looking around all this shit. We're collectors.
That's right. We collect things. So, yeah, definitely Whorehound. I think we pretty much already talked about that. So, want to talk about something other, speaking of collecting. That's another hard one to really think about because best one sheet poster.
Well, they all suck now. That's the problem. Like, I don't know if people have seen like the Strangers poster or Mirrors poster or the Prom Night. I really fucking hate the Prom Night poster. That's the biggest piece of shit. I think. Like, do you remember the Prom Night poster? The woman like screaming with a little tiara.
It's actually on the DVD too. So.
God, that sucks. They don't put any effort. It's all photographs too. They don't. Put any effort into doing stuff.
Oddly enough, the one poster that I can think of that I saw that I thought was a cool design, and I don't even like the movie, but I thought the poster was pretty cool, is Doomsday. Neil Marshall's Doomsday. It's like a bright red poster with a pretty cool tribal design on it and stuff. And it just looked like something different. I mean, it didn't have the floating heads in it or, you know, any of the artistic, you know, photographs, bitches screaming with a tiara on their head. You know?
Yeah, I can see that one. And actually, and even though we hated that movie, I mean, this really doesn't have anything to do with liking or hating the movie. It's more about the poster art. The one that I saw that was actually a painting, which was amazing in and of itself, and was pretty creative in the way that it was set up, too, was the poster for Jack Brooks, which I don't know if a lot of people saw it, but it's... It basically tells you the whole story of the movie in the poster, which I always enjoy when people do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you give you like a snapshot of what you're going to see when you go in to see the movie, which I thought that was what posters were for, but you'd never know that now.
Yeah, so that's best poster. What else we got?
We can talk about the most overrated and most underrated.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good one. I would probably do that real quick because we've talked about both movies quite a bit on this show and last week's show. My most overrated would definitely be The Strangers, just because I'm sick to death of all these mainstream horror sites putting this movie over like this is like one of the most terrifying movies that's come out in the last 5 or 6 years. It bored the hell out of me, this movie did. So, yeah, this gets my most overrated award for sure.
I have to agree with that. Like, there's nothing really that I thought came close to that. Like, I would almost say Cloverfield was overrated, even though just for the amount of hype that was around that movie when people went in, it wasn't a bad movie. It's just it could never live up to that amount of hype. But just for overall people that seemed to like that movie, and I could never understand it, it has to be The Strangers.
Mm-hmm. And most underrated, in my opinion, would have to be Mother of Tears. And I'll tell you why. Because almost everybody that emailed us or called us before we had seen the movie were pretty much complaining about it. Even fans of Argento were like, well, man, this isn't, you know, I don't know. I didn't really get into it that much. It's not that good. I don't understand that. So I put that as the most underrated. It was one of my favorite movies of the year, I think. And I hope Dimension Extreme actually comes out with it on Blu-ray. I think it'd be a really good Blu-ray if they would release it. I mean, they released fucking Diary of the Dead in Blu-ray, so why not Mother of Tears?
You could have a high-def version of Daryl Nicolodi's little fairy thing.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Mine's going to be something you probably wouldn't expect, but this is a little film that didn't get really any recognition, came out on DVD, and I'm thinking that it came out on DVD... I don't think it got any theatrical play, but it was The Lost.
Oh.
Jack Ketchum's The Lost.
Yeah.
That's a movie that it's really hard to pigeonhole that movie into any kind of subgenre. It's not really a slasher movie. It's not really an exploitation movie. It definitely had one of the most gruesome scenes that I can remember from any movie towards the end of the film. And nobody talks about it whatsoever. I mean, people talk about The Girl Next Door 10 times more than they talk about that movie. So,
yeah, and I remember when we reviewed this, we both really put over the movie. And I'd actually forgot about it. I mean, that'd been a few months ago. But that was another really good one that you definitely could consider underrated. And there was another one that was similar to it. I think it was based on the same story called An American Crime that was really good as well.
Right. That was one that Kathleen Quinlan, or I think that's her name, was in. Yeah.
So one last one, and then we'll take a break and get to the big one, which would be Film of the Year. How about that? We'll leave it up and, like, you know, that's how they do it in real award shows.
Yeah. So what's the...
Most needless remake.
Jesus. There's so many to pick from. That's the thing. Like, there were so many remakes this year, and a lot of them were just borderline fucking insanity. I'm curious as to know what you think about this.
I will have to go with Prom Night. Just because it definitely should never have been made. It's one of those movies that a true horror fan gets nothing out of it. You know, nor should they really. I mean, it doesn't have any gore, doesn't have any, anything a slasher movie should have, doesn't have any good tension, good scares, doesn't have a good killer, doesn't have any hot naked chicks in it, none of that. It does have the guy from That Thing You Do in it though.
It does.
Definitely most needless remake to me was Prom Night.
I was kind of hoping you'd pick Prom Night, because my pick is like the bastard stepchild of Prom Night. Like, I don't know why, but I can't separate these two movies in my head, because I'm thinking that one of them came out because of the other one, and they're
thinking.
They're like both the same type of movie, really. They had like twist endings. They were like slasher movies that weren't necessarily the most popular slasher movies around that period of time. But mine's April Fool's Day, the fucking remake of April Fool's Day. First of all, did it even go theatrical? I think it went straight to DVD. Yeah,
straight to DVD. It was originally planned to go theatrical.
It should have.
It was so goddamn bad.
It really was on par with Prom Night. I mean, I think both those films are equally as shitty. It's just, it was so needless, and it just seemed like that both of them, like, I don't know if Prom Night was cashing in on April Fool's Day, April Fool's Day was cashing in on Prom Night, the idea, I don't know which one came first. They're both horrible ideas, though.
Plus, Scout Taylor Straight Outta Compton is actually in there.
That's true.
So, with that, we're going to take a break. We have one last big award to get to, and that is Movie of the Year, Film of the Year, whatever. And we'll be talking about our own personal favorites and stuff as well. And you guys voted. You've heard some of the clips throughout the show. I think we played about the best 10 clips from, I think we got well over 100 people calling in and giving us, and that shocked us. Really.
Yeah, it really did.
I was like, Jesus, during the holiday season as well. But yeah, I mean, big thanks to everybody that called in and gave us your vote. And we will announce the winner and talk about, you know, some of the stuff we may be looking forward to in 2009. Maybe could win future Pity Award next year.
In either category, best or worst. Yeah. You never know.
So, we will be back shortly here on
DeadPilot.com.
Run for your life. The nightmare has begun. It will find you in the hour when dream and reality merge. The last desperate moment of darkness.
Hey, who is it?
Just before dawn. They were warned.
At least tell me where you're going.
So that when you don't come back, I'll know how to fill out the report.
But they did not understand the warning.
Demon. Gonna get them kids, Joe.
They came to the mountain for adventure and escape. What they found was a trial which only the strongest could survive. How could they know that beneath the awesome beauty of nature lay violence, danger, and death?
You see no
all the blood.
How could they know? The heat of their bodies was the magnet that would draw the terror to them.
You saw them kids?
I see your kids.
They're good minded. Just let them have their due.
Just before dawn, they will cry out. Just before dawn, they will struggle to escape. Just before dawn, the demon lives. If only they could die in their sleep.
Adam Peck. I just wanted to call in and ask my vote for Mother of Tears. And then second place, I don't know if you're doing a second place, but it would be Midnight Meat Train.
Hey guys, this is Ben from the board. I just wanted to cast my vote for Cloverfield for the best theatrical film of 2008. So that's my vote. I just wanted to say you guys are awesome. Keep kicking ass. Take it easy, guys. Have a happy new year.
Hellboy 2.
Hey, this is Jeremy from Texas, and my pick for best theatrical horror film of the year is Rambo. Is there anything else out there? You have the unstoppable killer who can't be hurt, hacking people all to pieces. Definitely Rambo, best theatrical movie of 2008. But happy New Year, guys.
Well, folks, the time has come. It's time to announce via your votes in the first ever, voted upon Film of the Year award here at Dead Pit.
Hooty hoo.
The fan favorite. We're going to talk about this. And I guess by unanimous decision.
That's right.
As far as theatrical
Surprise
horror
films. Me.
There wasn't a lot to choose from theatrically, but this one pretty much took it. Hands down, Cloverfield was the winner.
That's right. You guys chose the winner. That's what y'all like, Cloverfield. And I like Cloverfield as well. I thought that was a fun movie to watch in theaters. I can definitely understand why people wouldn't get into it just because of, you could have a seizure from watching it maybe. But
yeah, oddly enough, I had actually picked that as my best film before I even knew what the voting was. When you go to see a film, theatrically, and this has always been kind of my take on this, it should be an experience. Like, it shouldn't just be, like, that's why I don't really like the artsy films or the films that are, like, character studies or stuff like that. When you go to see a film, you want to see something that you won't be able to duplicate when you're at the house. And the shit in this movie, like, when you see this with a group of people and the sound and you got the big, 5.1 speakers and shit going, it'll blow you off your fucking ass. And I think that was the key to seeing a movie like this.
Yeah. It was a whole lot of fun to watch in theaters. And I realized just how much the theater sort of lent to its greatness when actually you watch it at home and it doesn't work nearly as good. So, I think you guys made a pretty good choice with that. As far as, my choice... I think I was talking about Mother of Tears is probably my choice for my favorite film of the year, I guess, just because I didn't see it coming at all. I didn't see Argento having another movie like that in him. But what else?
I'm going to say, though, while I did, pick Cloverfield as the best theatrical film, I guess that overall... And this movie's been mentioned a dozen times on here, but overall, the best film for me, whether it be independent or theatrical, whatever, was going to be inside no matter what. Because in a year of remakes and sequels and bullshit and just the most rehashed type of films you can imagine, there was actually, that film actually tried, at least tried to be, you know, full of tension and creative in the storyline. And whether or not you liked it or hated it or whatever, it was different. It was unique. I think that it established the same stuff that High Tension established when we saw that originally, too.
Yeah, I liked Inside a lot as well. And hopefully everybody enjoyed this fucking Petey Award show. I know it wasn't, you know, the average deadbeat show. But we're going to get back to that probably next week, aren't we, Uncle Bill?
Yeah, hopefully we are.
So, I guess everybody, hope everybody had a happy new year. Hope y'all enjoyed this show.
I hope you're proud of yourselves for almost making me quit doing this, you sons of bitches.
You dildo.
Hope you're happy.
So, we will be back next week, though. It'll be more of a, you know, structured show. It's just something we did just to, so you guys could have something to listen to as you're enjoying the New Year's. It is 2009. I think there's a lot more stuff to look forward to this year. I actually look forward to seeing bad movies. Like, I'm sure everybody's looking forward to seeing our review of H2 already.
Fuck.
And the Friday the 13th remake. And stuff like that. And there's actually one, isn't there one called The Unborn coming out next week?
There he is, yeah.
We need to go see that. We can kick off of our Dead Pit on the Road Season 3.
That little creepy-ass kid that looks exactly like that kid from Freddy or Dream Child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's a lot more horror films coming out this year, so that's a good thing. Whether or not they're good or not, we'll let you know.
Yeah, as far as anticipating anything, I'm always hopeful that a lot of these studios will get off their asses and try to come up with some original ideas, but I know what we're in for. We're in for the more of the same. We're in for remakes and sequels and prequels and fucking reimagining.
Sequels to the prequels.
Sequels to the prequels and rehash.
Prequels to the sequels.
You get ready for it. It's going to be a lot of bitching, but I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sure will be. So, thanks again, everybody, for calling in and casting your vote for the Petey Awards. If you guys like it, we might do it every year. I don't know. So, until then, until next time, I'm a Creepy Kentuckian.
And I'm Uncle Bill. Fuck you all.
Straight to hell. Yeah.
Bill at Cold Red, just offering everyone on Dead Pit Radio, Merry fucking Christmas, okay? Thanks. Bye.